At Baptist Health South Florida, it's our mission to care for you when you're injured or sick and help you stay healthy and fit. Welcome to the Baptist Health Talk podcast, where our respected experts bring you timely, practical health and wellness information to improve your family's quality of life.
Welcome, Baptist Health Talk podcast listeners. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Fialco. I'm a preventative cardiologist and lipidologist at Miami Cardiac and Vascular Institute, where I'm also chief of cardiology at Baptist Hospital and the chief population health officer at Baptist Health. Here we are again with another COVID surge, this time related to the Omicron variant. There are a lot of confusing messages coming at us about testing, boosters, and new CDC quarantine guidelines. So in the latest episode of Baptist Health's Resource Live program, we brought together a panel of experts to help clear up the confusion with facts and helpful information. I was pleased to host the episode, which featured Dr. Samer Fahmy, Chief Medical Officer at Baptist Health's Boca Raton Regional Hospital, Dr. Leo Nguyen, Chief of Emergency Medicine at Baptist Hospital, and Melanie Rodriguez, Outpatient Services Manager at Baptist Urgent Care Express. Let's hear what they had to say. Leo, I'll direct the first question to you, and I'll say to all of you, who would have thought that we'd be here for another COVID update a year and a half ago, and we did our first session, Facebook Live sessions, and through subsequent ones, but nonetheless, here we are. Leo, the first question is going to be about isolation and quarantine. CDC continuously updates what we do if we're infected or we're exposed. So first thing is, can you quickly just tell the difference between isolation and quarantine? So when the viewers hear those terms, they can figure out which one speaks to them. And then how have those guidelines changed and what it means for our viewers?
Yes, so if you test positive, then we expect you to isolate yourself, and that's isolating from the general population as well as even people in your household as best you can. If you're quarantining is if you have symptoms and you haven't tested yet, your test is pending, or you've had an exposure. So you have to, again, kind of wear a mask and try to stay out of the general public until you do get tested. There has been an evolution in the quarantining period for CDC. So it's all based on 5 days at this point. You stay at home for 5 days if you're quarantining. We do ask if you do have a fever, you extend it so you're fever-free for at least 24 hours.
So if someone's 5 days out, but they're still having fever, we still want them to stay at home
yes.
To isolate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you do come off of quarantine, obviously we do expect to wear a mask for at least 5 days beyond that.
Okay. And right now we recommend that people get tested prior to ending a quarantine or a isolation, or is it similarly just based on, you said, time and symptoms?
Yeah, there's been a lot of confusion there, and I do see a lot of over-testing in that regard. So it's generally a symptom-based strategy at this point. So really based on your symptoms, you know, a lot of patients come and continue to get tested, which is in reality unnecessary.
Which is a great evolution compared to when we first had COVID and, you know, 10, 14-day isolations, and some of it's due to what we've learned and some maybe to the change in the virus. To that segue, I'll go to Melanie regarding Omicron, the big buzzword. Again, a month ago or so, no one really knew what it was. Now, of course, it's at the tip of everyone's tongue and the forefront of everyone's brain. We know Omicron is much more transmissible, which is why we're seeing this incredible surge, this rapid surge of positive cases. Are there any differences in the infection itself? Are we seeing difference in symptoms with Omicron? Or are we able to draw any conclusions regarding how this viral variant might be different than Delta or some of the previous COVID-19 variants?
Sure, yeah, great question. So with the Omicron variant, we are seeing the symptoms very similar to that of an upper respiratory infection. So we're thinking, you know, of these symptoms more of like a runny nose, a scratchy or sore throat, plus or minus a fever. Also, we're seeing headaches. Some people are having more severe headaches than others, and then varying levels of fatigue. Some people are just feeling absolutely drained, and others are just saying they feel kind of crummy, like they know a cold or a flu is coming on. So data is suggesting that COVID-19 caused by Omicron variant is less severe than prior variants of COVID.
And how would you say less severe? Is it less severe? I think we're reporting that less likely to be hospitalized or less likely to get severe pneumonia, or is it just the headache is less severe? Can you define that a little bit more, what we mean by less severe?
Well, we're also thinking about people who are vaccinated or people who have also been infected previously. So some of the people that we're seeing testing positive, they've already had COVID a couple months ago or a year ago. So their symptoms are a little less severe, but we're also seeing just the general public less severe in general. There are people being hospitalized with the Omicron variant. It just depends on each particular patient's individual.
So you mentioned there are some trends in the kind of symptoms, more upper respiratory tract than down in the lungs, pneumonia, but we are seeing a variation. So that's good for a lot of people, but any individual, anything you have, you want to take seriously and determine if it's COVID or not. Sam, about the boosters now, let's get into, again, think of all the things that we've learned and developed in 2 years. Now we not just have vaccines, but we have boosters and we have different kind of boosters. So let's talk about Omicron and the boosters. What are we learning in the scientific community regarding the boosters' effectiveness against the Omicron variant?
Sure. So obviously the vaccines that we have were developed against earlier strains of COVID. So they are not perfectly built for Omicron. But that said, they are still very effective at preventing severe disease and hospitalization in people that have contracted the Omicron variant. So yes, they're not exactly tailored for it, but they're still very effective, and it's still recommended that you do get vaccinated. If you did get vaccinated earlier on in the pandemic, and it's been more than 5 months since your second vaccine dose, if you get a booster, it raises the level of antibodies that you have that are prepared to fight against the Omicron variant when you do get exposed to it. So if you want to prepare your body the best you could, you should get your booster 5 months out after your last shot. And if you are going to choose a booster, I would recommend you choose one of the mRNA vaccines. You know, Pfizer or Moderna are the preferred two. And both of them in lab studies have shown to increase the number of circulating antibodies. And those antibodies are really what we're looking for. That's what's going to help protect you. That's what's going to help keep that virus from making copies of itself when you do get exposed to it and it does enter your body. So especially if you're vulnerable, if you're older, if you have chronic medical conditions, it is critical that you get boosted because that, you know, that's the patient population that we see suffer the most with Omicron, are folks who are heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, ones that are at an increased risk to start with from getting sicker with COVID. Those are the folks that would really, they really have to get boosted because it is very protective.
And you mentioned age as well. So over 65 puts at a high risk as well, we're seeing. So the vaccines work, the boosters seem to work. Talk a little bit about that concept, which we speak less of, which was breakthrough infections. When the vaccines were first developed, there was this feeling that an individual would not get COVID. But certainly you and your role as a chief medical officer, the rest of the panel, how important is it to not necessarily not get COVID, but what we're seeing, which is not being hospitalized and not ultimately dying of COVID? So are we as concerned of contracting COVID when you're vaccinated, or more the vaccines we know do provide that level of security of getting being hospitalized?
Sure. No, and that's a great question, because that's a point of confusion for a lot of people. I think to understand that, you have to think about how vaccines work. Vaccines prime your system so that when you do get exposed to a certain foreign body, certainly a virus, COVID-19, your body recognizes it and within hours or days starts building your immunity to fight against it. So is there a chance that you get exposed to the virus after getting vaccinated? Of course. Is there a chance that that virus replicates or makes copies of itself for a day before your body's primed enough to push out enough antibodies to fight it? Yes. So that's why we see breakthrough infections. You can get infected. Now, where the vaccines really help is that instead of making billions of copies, maybe you're making millions or thousands of copies of that virus so that your body can catch up and fight it quicker. No doubt, you could still get the infection. But because your body is primed, because you have antibodies prepared to fight it, the infection shouldn't get as severe. And you shouldn't have as many copies of the virus for your body to fight, because you're able to suppress that earlier rather than taking 3-4 days by the time your body builds those antibodies from scratch. You're prepared. Your antibodies are there. They're ready. They'll recognize that virus. But they may not protect you in the first 1 or 2 days when the virus enters your nose or your mouth or starts getting into your throat, because it does need a about a day for your body to prime up and kick out those antibodies after it recognizes that COVID is actually there. May not protect you from every infection, but it should definitely protect you against hospitalization and definitely should lower the number of people who die from COVID when you're vaccinated.
I appreciate that clarification. We know that the main way we will, we'll say eradicate, but maybe a better way is control COVID, is to decrease the transmissibility, any individual less likely to give it to someone else. If a vaccinated person gets COVID, symptomatic or asymptomatic, are we finding, is there any data that they may be less transmissible or transmissible for a shorter period, or does the vaccine not affect the transmissibility of COVID in a vaccinated individual?
Can you speak to that? Along those same lines, if you're not making as many copies because your immune system was primed and ready to fight that virus the minute it saw it, you don't have as many copies in your mouth and your nose. So if you cough, sneeze, sing, yell, less viral particles are flying out into the air and you're less likely to infect those around you. So the vaccine does protect against making copies. So it should protect against spread of that disease. Now, it's not 100% protection, but it's definitely much better protection than those who are unvaccinated who can keep making copies for days on end before your body catches up and starts to recognize it. So absolutely should limit the spread and it should limit severity of disease. And that's why we keep encouraging those the folks who are unvaccinated to get vaccinated. And if you're, especially if you're vulnerable with medical conditions, or if you're older than 65 and you haven't been boosted, you should definitely get boosted because that'll protect others around you as well.
Wonderful. Thanks for that information. Melanie, testing, another area of rapid changing of thoughts and guidelines and recommendations, some of it having to do with the limitation of testing. Can you speak a little bit about where people with different levels of COVID concern or infection should get tested? For example, should we be going to emergency rooms to get tested if we're concerned we have COVID? Speak to what we think is best in terms of preserving and protecting our health system, but getting the people the kind of testing at the sites that is most specific towards their conditions. Can you speak to that?
Sure, definitely. So I do want to remind everybody that Baptist Health, whether it be in the emergency departments, urgent cares, or urgent care express, we are providing COVID-19 testing for those in need. But there's a few things that we wanted to touch on that Baptist is not a community testing site. So if you're looking for COVID testing for travel or work clearance, or if you're looking to, if you're asymptomatic and maybe you've been exposed, what I would first recommend is reaching out to those community testing sites that have been provided to you. They could be a good resource to get tested quickly. Now, if you are someone who may be at high risk, or someone who does have symptoms, mild or severe, definitely we would want you to seek care by medical professionals and get a full evaluation. So whenever patients seek care at a Baptist Health facility, they will receive full vitals, an exam by either a PA, nurse practitioner, or a physician. And the patients would be triaged in independence of their severity. So someone who's having chest pain and difficulty breathing will be seen sooner than a patient with a sore throat or a fever. So just keep that in mind. Please be patient with your healthcare providers because we are working day and night so hard for our patients because we want to see everybody in a timely manner. But just be patient with us. Things that should be going to the emergency department or calling 911 would be for chest pain, difficulty breathing, even back pain sometimes could be a sign that there's some difficulty in the lungs or in the heart. So all of those should definitely go to the emergency department. Something like a sore throat, runny nose, low-grade fever, headache, we can see that at the urgent cares or the urgent care express. Another thing I wanted to note is before you leave home to go to an urgent care or urgent care express, please get online and look at our hours of operation. Some locations have changed their hours of operation during these high surge times.
So again, if you're asymptomatic, just getting tested, as you said, for travel, please use the public, the community health centers. If you're mildly symptomatic, try to call your doctor. We can even use Baptist Health Care on Demand online. If you have more significant symptoms, again, urgent care is be appropriate. Certainly, if you have severe symptoms, then it's totally appropriate to use an emergency room. And that
Absolutely.
Would be a difficulty Absolutely. Breathing or what have you, which is great.
Okay. And if you're unsure and you don't know, you can always come in to check. We'd rather you get checked rather than to go out and just think it's a cold and maybe spread it to someone who's in that vulnerable category that we spoke about. So just keep that in mind.
Thank you. Leo, talk a little bit. We talk about testing, but we know there's great discrepancy between the PCR test, you could explain what that is, and the rapid antigen tests. And even within the rapid antigen tests, what are the recommendations now? How reliable are they specifically for Omicron? So if you could talk a little bit about the different kind of testing, pros and cons, or maybe a better way would be to put the abilities and limitations of the different kinds of testing.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we have evolved throughout this pandemic, and now testing is readily available. And there's always a question on what the best test is and how I should be tested. So antigen tests are readily available at the community testing sites and even over the counter at your local pharmacy. It actually acts as a very good screening tool. It's actually a very good test, pretty accurate and a very quick turnaround time. So very good for the population to understand if they're positive or negative. PCR is, there is no perfect test. PCR is our most accurate test. It may take a little bit longer. And the question is, do I need to get a confirmatory PCR test of a positive antigen? Typically the answer is a no. Again, just look at the entire picture. If you have a cough, you have a fever, you have a sore throat, you have the symptoms of COVID and you test positive, then don't get too caught up in the testing. But certainly antigen testing is a great tool for the entire population, readily available, and really helps us determine our quarantine guidelines.
And as a follow-up to that, Sam, for the home testing, sometimes it's hard for people to make an appointment to get testing, or they can't get out. So we do have these home tests, and they're continuing to evolve, and we'll have some follow-up questions regarding that. But how accurate are they? And I guess the real question is, if I have COVID, how accurate are they to tell me I have COVID? Meaning, could they falsely say I don't have COVID? And if I don't have COVID, is it pretty assured that if it says it's negative, if I don't have COVID, they'll be negative, or will they falsely say I have COVID? So how accurate are these home tests for both positive and negative test results?
Sure. So I think home tests are a wonderful resource, are a really good resource for patients to have, but they should be used correctly and used in the right scenario. If you don't have any symptoms at all and you're screening yourself because you've had some sort of exposure, they may have some false negative results. So they may give you a negative result when you're in the beginning stages of catching COVID and you just haven't made enough copies yet for it to detect it. The best time to use the antigen test is if you have symptoms. If you have symptoms, that's what makes them the most accurate. If you have a sore throat, if you have a cough and you swab, that cough is probably because there's virus there, and the antigen test is built to detect a certain protein on top of that virus. So it should detect it. Now, if it's very early after an exposure, the first 2 days, we know it takes 2-3 days sometimes for you to even develop symptoms, even though you're carrying some of that virus. The PCR tests that Leo spoke about, those make copies of that small amount of virus, and they replicate it 28 times, sometimes up to 42 times. Because you're replicating it so many times, you can detect minute quantities of virus. Antigens can't really do that. Your home test is an antigen test, most likely, and that is best used if you're starting to get symptoms, because it's most accurate when you get symptoms.
Very confusing when terms are thrown out. You did a nice job articulating the differences and when to use them. And to follow up on that, I'll ask Leo, and Sam mentioned it. If someone is exposed, we go to dinner and you call me up the next morning and say, I have COVID, how quickly should someone get tested for COVID-19? I want to know right away, should we wait? And we're talking about asymptomatic people. Long should you wait if you're asymptomatic? If you're symptomatic, as Sam said, the test should be relatively accurate. How about if you're asymptomatic?
So if you have no symptoms, we're seeing a lot of this. There's an exposure, they have no symptoms, they come to get tested, and many times inaccurate. So you have to wait a few days if you have no symptoms, even along the lines of 5 days, 3 to 5 days. So closer to 5 days if there's no symptoms. If in the interim you develop, the classic symptoms, then obviously get tested. But oftentimes people test too early and get a false negative and have that false reassurance.
Yeah.
If I may add, Jonathan, one of the things that would help. If you did have a high risk exposure and you have access to home tests, one of the methods that we've recommended is serial testing, which makes it more accurate. Serial testing means let's test yourself once a day or once every other day for a few days. That way you can give it a chance to turn positive. So that's one of the recommended strategies. Follow yourself. Don't believe the first negative if you don't have symptoms. Check it again a couple of days later and maybe a third one a day or two after that. And that's how you can be assured that that antigen test has given you a fair result.
So you really have to search for it a little bit if you're asymptomatic and you really want to know if you've been exposed and you have it. Wait, more importantly, so you don't transmit it to others. And again, going back to your previous comments, if one's symptomatic, then the test of anything, the tests are pretty good at determining whether it's COVID or not. So if you read a recommendation, is it, am I asymptomatic exposed? Do I have symptoms? So pick the pathway that's specific towards your condition or your family's condition. Thanks for that, those answers, guys. So in the interest of time, we'll turn it over to some questions that are coming in from the audience. And here's a good one. I'll send it to Sam regarding the booster shots. So if someone's fully vaccinated and can get COVID, which we understand and we explained why that's possible, how long after their active COVID infection should they then wait to get a booster? And first question, should they get a booster? And second question would be, how long should they wait afterwards?
Yeah, so it is recommended that you still get a booster even after you get a recover from a COVID infection. You know, the initial guidance with the vaccines was it was a bit confusing because some people said wait 90 days, but that 90 days wasn't really based on anything other than the fact that you may have enough antibodies to support you and protect you for those first 90 days after getting an infection. So when the vaccines were harder to find, we were telling folks that got that infection to wait a little longer, give somebody else a chance. We don't have that problem anymore. Vaccines are available, they're everywhere. And as soon as you're out of your isolation period from COVID, you're eligible to get vaccinated. And that's when you should do it. You know, there's no reason to wait anymore. We have plenty of vaccine supply available. And if you're out of isolation, you're for example, your 5 days are up, or if you had a fever longer than that, up to 10 days are up, go ahead and get vaccinated at that point. There's no reason to wait any longer.
So one of the pushback that a lot of people who won't get vaccinated, which is not the same thing as anti-vaxxers, is I've had COVID, I don't need the vaccine. It's a little caveat of what you just described, but can you speak specifically to that thought?
Yeah, so some people that have, you know, recovered from COVID say that I have natural immunity and I don't necessarily need to get vaccinated. And there's no doubt that natural immunity after recovering from an infection gives you some level of protection. It does. But we're confident that the natural immunity plus vaccination gives you an even better level of protection. And that'll, you know, imagine having those antibodies combined with the antibody that you get from a natural infection, combined with antibodies that are tailor-made for COVID-19 with the vaccine. The combination of both gives you the ultimate protection. So why not? If you want to avoid being sick or getting a fever or being out of work or being away from family, you know, it seems like getting vaccinated would be the easy choice. So I'd still recommend it for those with natural immunity.
As would I. Melanie, for people who, you know, again, maybe getting a little better, but it's hard to find rapid test kits. So if someone has a high level exposure and can't get a kit, what would you recommend they do to protect themselves and others?
Sure. Great question. So due to the widespread transmission of the Omicron variant, I would say if you have symptoms of COVID and you've been exposed to COVID, even regardless of your vaccination status, I would say that home management would be appropriate for most patients with mild symptoms if your testing is not available. So that would be for most patients who are able to be isolated at home, who are able to manage their symptoms at home, and who have good outpatient follow-up, maybe with their primary care doctor or specialist. Any patient with risk factors, like we previously mentioned, even if they have mild symptoms, I really would suggest maybe a telemedicine visit with your primary care, or if your symptoms get worse, head into the emergency department if you have risk factors that may cause your symptoms or your, you know, just for things to get worse. So if you have risk factors, I would seek care sooner, but not necessarily that testing is 100% needed. So if you can manage your symptoms at home, I would say do that.
Thank you. Leo, when can we expect the vaccine to protect kids 5 years and under?
There's a lot of data coming out to children, the vaccine from, 12 and older, and then from 5 to 12, and there's constant studies to see what the safe dose is, safe time. So I'm personally looking forward to it as a father myself. So hopefully relatively soon, and a lot of energy is looking at the pediatric population. We are seeing in our children's hospitals and pediatric emergency departments a very high number of COVID patients that are positive, and even resulting in some hospitalizations. So yeah.
So we are seeing more children being hospitalized with this wave of COVID than previous.
Yeah, it's hard to understand if it's a sheer volume of just a high number of pediatric infections and just that small percentage of progression complications get hospitalized. But yeah, we're definitely seeing an increase in the absolute number of infections overall and subsequently hospitalizations.
And a quick question, is vomiting a symptom of COVID in children? Is that a more common presenting symptom?
Even in adults, yeah. There's the symptoms are pretty widespread. It is, just to circle back to a question we talked about earlier, the symptoms of COVID. The difference with this variant is a lot of it is staying in the upper airway. So sore throat, headache, nasal congestion, body aches, but vomiting and diarrhea certainly are presenting symptoms as well.
Thank you. And Sam, I'm going to direct the last question to you. It's actually an interesting question, came in from a viewer. It has to do, the premise is that thousands of home tests from Abbott have been sent out, instructions not given, they're supposed to go online to be proctored, maybe they're not. So the point is, speak a little bit to what we can consider an underreporting of true COVID cases, because when people are testing at home and positive, are we capturing those patients? Is it relevant to capture the patients? So speak a little bit about where we're at in terms of the reporting that goes on daily of COVID positives and the percent of test positives, and where we do feel we're not capturing all the positives based on home tests not being reported.
Sure. No, and I think that's a very valid point, is that the numbers that you see reported in the news and from the New York Times or World Data, or even if you Google the statistics and see what numbers come up, those are numbers that laboratories are reporting. If you get tested at a lab, if your test is ran at a lab, we're required to report those numbers, and those numbers are what's reported in the statistics that you read. Anybody that's testing themselves at home, whether it's with an antigen test or molecular-based tests that are available also in some retail pharmacies, those tests, obviously, you don't report them to anybody. So we feel like, despite the fact that our numbers of new cases now are the highest ever seen in this pandemic, it is sorely underestimating the true incidence of how many people have COVID today. It may be as much as double what the numbers that are being reported are out in the news today. So a number of cases right now is rising sharply. We have not hit the peak of this surge that we're seeing with Omicron. We're still climbing heavily. And despite the extremely high numbers that you're seeing, that is vastly underreported. And the true number is much, much higher than that because of all the home tests and because of the folks that never really test themselves. They have symptoms. It's mild enough. They don't feel the need to get tested. They isolate. And when the symptoms disappear, they resume their normal activities, but never get a test. So absolutely, those numbers are smaller than what the actual numbers are.
Great. And that does mean also that the percent, not the percent positive rate, we agreed on that, but even the percent of patients who wind up hospitalized might be lower than reported because we're not capturing those numbers as well. So it is a numbers game. Not to say anyone can't be hospitalized with COVID. And we're certainly seeing a wealth of people who you wouldn't expect necessarily to get sick in the hospitals. So appreciate that as well. This has been really great. And in the interest of time, again, I'd like to offer each of you to give final comments or thoughts or whatnot. So please, I'll start with Leo. Any final thoughts or anything you want to reiterate or add that we haven't said?
Yeah, I just feel for the community, our patients, our staff, just urging everyone to stay safe. We do have some new weapons in our arsenal against COVID. And to me, the number one is getting vaccinated and getting boosted. And at this point, as Dr. Fahmy suggested, you know, sometimes the vaccination is not enough. You know, if you're beyond 5 months, you get boosted because it makes a huge difference. And if you do get hospitalized, it makes a huge difference in the severity of illness. So stay safe.
Thank you. Melanie?
Yeah, just echoing Dr. Nguyen's sentiment of stay safe. Don't let your guard down yet. This is not done. So just be safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, keep gathering small. Also, another thing is just a reminder to everyone to be kind, especially to everyone you're dealing with. I think we're all, the stress level is high for all of us. So just try to have patience and be kind with everybody. And I think it'll make this a whole lot easier to get through.
Well said. And Sam, before your final comments, I'm going to throw a bonus question at you that I want to add is, should one wait for an Omicron booster or should one get boosted with what's currently available?
Yeah, no, I mean, the Omicron booster could take several months. And to be honest with you, I don't think this surge will last that long. We anticipate that it climbs really rapidly, but it should decline sometime in the next month or so. We should start seeing that decline. We haven't peaked yet, but it's there. There's no reason to wait for an Omicron booster. I think we get the vaccines that are available today. But I really want to follow what Melanie said, because I think she makes an excellent point. The kindness is that we're seeing higher numbers of people out sick from every job and every occupation, and it's not sparing healthcare. We're seeing a lot of our nurses and our doctors and our clinicians around the hospitals out sick, and it's really putting a lot of stress on our staffing levels and our ability to keep providing the highest level of care that patients have come to expect from us. So as you visit the ER or visit an urgent care or visit the hospital, please have some patience, because just like every other industry, we are doing our best to have people work double and triple shifts to be able to cover the needs of our community. And we've seen it impact travel. We've seen it impact other businesses. It's definitely impacting healthcare. Our staffing is at levels that we've never seen before in terms of the number of people and number of employees out. And of course, we have to be more cautious because we can't bring folks back until we're sure that they're not able to transmit that infection to others. So again, just bear with us through this time. And in the meantime, if you're out there, get vaccinated and get boosted. That's the best way you can limit the spread as much as possible. And you know, be kind to each other and protect each other by getting vaccinated.
To our listeners, remember that you can send us your comments and suggestions for future topics at baptisthealthtalk@baptisthealth.net. That's baptisthealthtalk@baptisthealth.net. On behalf of everyone at Baptist Health, thanks for listening and stay safe.
Find additional valuable health and wellness information on our resource blog at baptisthealth.net/news. And be sure to interact with us on our social media channels for live and upcoming events. This podcast is brought to you by Baptist Health South Florida, healthcare that cares.